Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. Hello, Savannah, Georgia, coming to you live. At least it's live for us on the East Coast and Manhattan, I presume, for Adrian over there on the East Coast as well. So this is the first time that we're both in the Eastern time zone. And so welcome, Adrian, to the show. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I had myself muted because I was coughing. Yes, I can hear you just fine.
So this is a special show. I don't have a lot of my equipment with me. I'm not in my sound studio. I don't even have my script with me. So this is live. What you see is what you get. And so I'm in my hotel room. Hopefully the internet for the hotel is fast enough to produce this show. And I'm on my National Book and Media Tour. I've been traveling all across the country, going everywhere on all the four major networks, just sharing my important message, how to prevent your loved one's illness or disease from actually killing you. So anyway, a third of caregivers approximately actually die before their loved ones do. And the rest of them, you know, the lucky ones that don't die, well, they just become sicker than their loved ones do, and they need eventually their own caregiver. And so you should see the shock on the host's face when I quote that statistic. It's like, oh, my God. You know, and then you can just see their mind start thinking, oh, my elderly parents, you know, one fall away. So it's been fun. I just did my 13th morning show this morning in Savannah, Georgia. And tomorrow I'm off to Atlanta, Georgia, where we will be talking to more producers face-to-face and booking more shows, because I finished the first leg of it, and now we're going to start the second leg. And so, you know, we're talking about my book. It's My Life Too, Reclaim Your Caregiver Sanity by Learning When to Say Yes and When to Say No. Like I say, it's perfect for caregivers who know they should be putting their needs first, but they just don't know how. And I say that because there's caregivers out there who don't know they should be putting their needs first. They think that they should be getting the crumbs. And if there's no crumbs, then they should be getting nothing. And those are the ones who burn out. And I've tried to talk to them. I'm sure you have also, Adrian. I don't think we will ever convince them different, that their life is equally worth of value as their loved ones. They just don't get it. And I'm not sure what percentage of caregivers feel that way. Maybe it's the 30% who actually die, you know, before their loved ones do. That would make sense. But, you know, so theoretically speaking, my book is only to 2/3 of the population, because the other third is hopeless and will never reach them. I mean, I know that's a negative thing to say, and I don't confess that, and I don't proclaim it. We're going to try to win all of them, 100% of them, because as long as there's breath in their lungs and blood through their veins, we can save them.
Where there's life, there's hope.
So how are things in New York today?
A little.
Same old.
No, it's fine. It's in the 40s. It's sort of balmy, actually. A little more humid than you would expect in that temperature. It's actually kind of nice. Let's see. I'm going to look up the temperature for us. 47. So that's not bad.
What is it again?
47. What is it where you are?
It's about kind of what it feels here. Yeah. How far is Georgia from New York?
Well, I don't know. I've made it by car without stopping. I'm going to go back. I used to live in Atlanta in a former life.
Really?
So 1970. Long time ago.
What should I expect? All I know about Atlanta is it burned during the Civil War.
Oh, you're going to Atlanta?
Tomorrow, yeah.
What should you? I
the CNN building. The CNN building down there for several days.
Nice. Yeah. I was there when downtown consisted just of the Hyatt Hotel. There weren't many new buildings down there at all. It was just as the boom started, and they built underground Atlanta. And there were lots of antiques, and it was fun to be there. I don't know what it is now. I haven't been there in about at least 20 years.
Well, I know it's the number four market in television, they must be doing very well. Second only to L.A., New York, not in that order. New York, I think, is first, and then L.A. and Chicago, and then I think it's Atlanta, if I'm not mistaken.
It's a big city, yeah.
It is. It's a big city. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about caregiving here. You know, It's just so sad because so many caregivers are just struggling, and they're such good people. You know, I wouldn't feel – I don't want to say that. They're just such good people, you know, and it's like good people shouldn't have to suffer that much. You know, there should be enough karma in the world to make good people have a good life, et cetera. But I don't know. I think people just have to understand that there's personal responsibility with life, and, you know, what you reap, you sow, and there's decisions to make. And of course, caregivers aren't to blame for the plight they're in. I mean, all of a sudden a loved one gets sick, and now they're in many cases the only one who volunteered or who is even able to do it. So they do it out of obligation. They do it out of guilt. They do it out of love. You know, there's positive and negative reasons they do it for. It depends on the motive of the caregiver. But I think generally most people do it because they love the person. If it's a parent, you know, they feel like, well, this person has given me life. They've taken care of me when I was helpless, and I need my diaper changed. Now they're helpless, and they need their diaper changed. And you know, that's very admirable attitude to have.
That wasn't my situation when I ended up caring for a parent. There are a lot of people who do not like their parents. My father was one of the one third of caregivers who died before the person they were caring for. And my mother survived him, and she and I never got along. And I promised him that I would be there for her so that he could die peacefully. Which he did. And I kept my promise to him. I promised him that I would take good care of her and that I would be there for her. And I did it for him out of love. I did it for him out of love.
Okay.
And for her, she was just lucky. She was damn lucky. She was damn lucky to have my husband as in her life, because he paid for me to go down and he paid for me to come up and rent the car and stay at the hotels and all that stuff. And
I did a show a long time ago. Go ahead. I didn't know you weren't finished.
Yeah, no, I wasn't finished. There are a lot of caregivers, especially female caregivers caring for their mothers, who have problems with it.
Sure. Have had problems. Yeah, there's a dynamic between a mother and a daughter anyway. You know, a lot of mothers and daughters, they love each other, but they just don't get along. They just irk each other. And they, you know, there's so much like the mother is still treating this adult woman like a child and still, you know, there's
jealous.
Just a lot of therapy. A lot of therapy needs to be going on there.
Yeah.
But
on both sides.
Yes. So why don't we take a break first before we get into what we're going to do?
Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, has just released his sixth book entitled It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. It was specifically written for caregivers who know they should be putting their needs first, but just don't know how. Dave is the sole caregiver to his wife, Charlene, since 1996. He knows firsthand what caregivers are going through because he is one. And he now speaks all across the country offering caregivers his incredible caregiver support package. Even the airlines tell us that in the event of an emergency, to put your oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. They know that those who don't heed their advice often black out, thus becoming unable to help either themselves or their child. And caregivers are exactly the same way. It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. Will help caregivers who are neglecting their sleep, diet, and social life, and learn to put their needs first. Pick up your copy today, or buy one for your special caregiver. On sale everywhere, and at caregiverscaregiver.com.
So we're back with Adrian Gruberg and Dave Nassani, and we're talking about caregiving, and we're talking about specifically, it's my new book. It's My Life Too: Reclaim Your Caregiver Sanity by Learning When to Say Yes and When to Say No. And there's such a funny thing I do about guilt. You know, I have a coach, and he's just teaching me to be more dramatic about it. So, you know, we talk about the three largest reasons that caregivers don't. How do I put it? I'm all tongue-tied here, isn't it? So I do three radio shows, and I'm on my television shows, and I'm just all tongue-tied. You know, I forgot about the show when you paged me. I was laying down in my room just saying, oh, what a nice afternoon. And it's, oh, my gosh, we got a show to do.
Well, I mean, if you want, we can do it later. I mean,
No.
If you need
so
to
maybe
rest,
I'm just a little delirious from the post nap delirium, you know, that's what it is.
Okay.
So one of the mistakes, that's the word I was looking for. One of the mistakes that caregivers make is that they allow guilt to influence their decisions. And so I call it the Sanford and Son syndrome. You know, if you remember back in the 70s, there was a show, and Lamont Sanford was the caregiver of Fred Sanford, who was an elderly gentleman who had a junk business. And Fred was always guilting his son into doing stuff that he shouldn't be doing. And you remember how he did it? He said, oh, this is the big one. Elizabeth, I'm coming for you, honey. So the host usually ends up, you know, cracking up, because he wasn't expecting that, you know. And so it's so true. Caregivers are dealing with guilt, and a lot of times they don't know where it's coming from. But their loved ones, even though they're disabled and even though they might have dementia or Alzheimer's or incapacitated in some way, they still know how to manipulate their caregiver for some strange reason. That hasn't escaped them. And so they can make them feel guilty. I'm sure you felt that.
That's when it's the child.
Children
know,
do that too.
The parents can
don't
make
they?
The children. No, I mean the parents can make the children feel guilty. Like, I did this for you. You need to do it for me. It's your turn to do it for me.
Yeah. So
whether you
what's
like
the
it
cure
or not.
For guilt? You know, I tell people, you know, you've got to just treat guilt like a diaper. You know, guilt is like the traffic cop of your conscience. it's a good thing. We don't want to get, you know, remove guilt, because society would crumble if we did. But if you're feeling guilty, I would tell people, if you're feeling guilty as a caregiver, stop and ponder and think and just examine your conscience and say, now, wait a minute, I'm feeling very guilty about this. Someone is making me feel guilty. Do I have any right to feel guilty?
Do I have any reason? You always have a right to feel guilty.
That's what I meant to say. Do I have any reason? I'm having trouble with words today. Do I have any reason to feel guilt? And if the answer, if you're not sure, then ask someone you trust, you know, like Dear Abby or your brother or your somebody, and say, listen, here's the situation. This is what happened. Do I deserve this guilt or not? And if they agree with you that, no, you don't deserve this guilt, and they'll talk you through it and say, you know, they had no right to throw that guilt on you. That was totally inappropriate, blah, blah, blah. And so if that's the case, then you can, with a clear conscience, say, okay, this is undeserved guilt. Now, there's deserved guilt, there's undeserved guilt. This is undeserved guilt. And with undeserved guilt, you just say, okay, I'm going to, like, wrap it up like in a diaper, like the poop is the guilt, and I'm just throwing it away, you know, because that's what you do with dirty diapers. You throw it away, and you got to throw the guilt away. And it's hard for some people to throw guilt away because they're so used to feeling guilty all their life. You know, I think of, I don't know if you ever watched that show, Everybody Loves Raymond.
Of course.
But there was a character in there, Robert Barone. And the guy, all you had to do was look at him funny, and it's like, what did I do? You know, it's like the guy was riddled with guilt because his mother made him feel guilty all of his life. And so just one little trigger, boom, and caregivers are like that too. And it may take years of therapy to get over that. Hopefully not. But hopefully all they need to do is listen to my radio show and read my book, and they'll be done with their guilt. But, you know, we can only hope.
It doesn't matter whether or not you understand what's motivating you, what's making you feel guilty. If you just say, okay, I'm doing this and I'm not going to feel guilty about it, doesn't matter whether or not you understand it. If you start doing something better, if you start doing something for yourself, you're going to feel better. And it's like in the 12-step programs, they will tell you it doesn't matter why you stop. It just matters. You don't need to understand all the psychological reasons. Just stop. You can go back years later. You can go back years later and examine it if you want to. But to get your life back on track, just do the right thing. And you get better.
Yeah.
It works.
Now, let's say that there is a reason that you should feel guilty, though, that what you did, maybe you snapped at your loved one, or you said some hurtful things, or you withheld something that they needed, you know, like you got mad at them and you made them go hungry, you know, that night or something. Let's say you did something really, really mean that you should feel guilty about. Okay, that means the guilt is working. Okay, and what should we do? The same thing. We ask ourselves. We stop and ponder. Should I? And if the answer is obviously yes, then fix it. You know, you can apologize. You can make restitution. Right. You can throw yourself at the mercy of the court. You can turn yourself into the police. You can, you know, whatever it takes to fix it. And of course, you know, if you did something bad and you say, I just want to confess, I locked my mother in a closet for 3 days and I just want to turn myself in. Please take me to jail, please.
Yeah, please.
Because that might be better than, you know, caring for your mother. Oh, I'm being really bad here. Forgive me.
This is called the way you feel,
dark
though.
Humor. I know, caregivers have to laugh too. They have to make fun of things. Otherwise, they'd go crazy.
You know,
now, I don't know why Jewish people have a monopoly on guilt, or so it seems that there's a stereotype that Jewish mothers are the queens of dispensing guilt. Now, you're Jewish. I assume you had a Jewish mother. So tell us all about guilt. Give us an education about how the guilt thing works, especially from your perspective.
Well, mothers are the best at it. I think Italian mothers are just as guilty.
That's true.
Of
ethnic
instilling that kind of guilt. It has to do with the mother-son relationship is very different than the mother-daughter relationship. The sun rises and sets on little boys, and they take very good care of them and wait until they're grown up and married until they start inflicting guilt. And then it's usually on the daughter-in-law.
Do you remember that movie Moonstruck?
Sure.
They were engaged. Yeah, this guy was engaged to Cher, right? Mm-hmm. And the mother, I guess, didn't like her and didn't want it to happen. So she became deathly ill. So he had to go, you know, and when she found out that the marriage was off, all of a sudden it was a miracle. She got up from her deathbed and she's fine now, you know? And so, yeah, mother's Italian, Jewish, ethnic. I'm Syrian, and, you know, Syrian mothers are kind of that way too. They have a way of just realizing that you can manipulate a person and it doesn't have to be overt guilt. It can be very subtle, you know, just
very subtle,
sneak under the table kind of guilt.
Niggling.
Yeah, like you throw a hand grenade in your room and you leave, and you know, the hand grenade's doing its job. The guilt is just slowly dispensing, you know, smoke in the room and what have you. And it's just not a good thing. Guilt will kill you, you know. So many people have stomach problems, ulcers, bleeding ulcers, perforated colons, and all sorts of things like that. And then cancer. Yeah. These are all internal things that happen to people who don't know how to get all that junk out and just release it, you know?
Right.
And so it's just so sad. Caregivers generally are overweight. They're under nutritious. They're sleep deprived. They just do all these things that are hurting them. And maybe subliminally, you know, unconsciously, they're just trying to kill themselves because their life is so miserable. I don't know.
They think they deserve to have a miserable life.
And misery loves company.
They're paying their penance for God knows what. And that's not true.
And nobody wants to be a friend with someone like that, so they lose all their friends. Nobody wants to be around a Debbie Downer, you know?
No. No.
So.
I think it's a very interesting dynamic. I find that men will generally either find someone to take care of the person, or I think you're the exception, one of the exceptions here, or walk away. You know, I mean, I know that Steve would never, ever have been able to be a caregiver to me. He would have made sure I had excellent care and he would have been around, but he would not have been able to do what I did for him, or what his mother did for his father, because his father also had lung cancer, and his mother was quite the caregiver. But she was also quite the guilt instiller. But you see, I was the daughter-in-law who was there to pick up the mantle of being a good caregiver to his mother. He didn't have to do that. So
God bless you,
Adrian. Very, very frequently. The daughter-in-law, my best friend's mother-in-law is 96 years old now. And for the past, it'll be their 50th anniversary next year. It's hard to believe. But I don't remember exactly where I was going with this. Yeah, but her mother-in-law will still think the sun rises and sets on her son, and yet she will call Emily in the middle of the night, and Emily is the one that has to come running. It's amazing. She doesn't expect her son to lift a finger. He's the prince, and she's got to do all the work. It's not
she's
easy.
She's the toad. And you know, perfectionism.
Yeah, that's the hardest thing. Feeling you're not doing something right or not doing enough.
Yeah, that's such a big thing about caregivers. You know, they think that, you know, in their job, they have a level of perfection or a level of, you know, high standard. And this is another job and they want to do it, but they're totally unqualified for it. They're not ready for it. It's not on their resume. They know nothing about. And it's not like you can go training. You know, like I tell people on the radio show, I says, you know, now is the time to learn how to be a caregiver, because just wait. You will either become a caregiver or you'll need a caregiver, and that could happen tomorrow. So now's the time to pick up a book and start reading about caregiving, not when, you know, it's too late and now you don't have time to scratch your head and you're busy changing diapers all day long. And so there's a section in my book is called Say No to Perfectionism. You know, the whole theme of the book is say yes to this and say no to that and say yes to this and say no to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I talk with caregivers all the time, and there is one indicator that allows me to predict whether or not they will with near certainty become a burned out casualty, right? You can predict them too, right?
Yeah.
The more of a perfectionist a person is, the more likely burnout will occur. That might surprise you, but I've seen time and time again how perfectionists unwittingly make decisions that set them up for stress-related illnesses, emotional overwhelm, and a joyless life. I know a lot of joyless, careless caregivers. Perfectionists are never satisfied. Since no one is perfect, it's impossible to satisfy a perfectionist. Not even themselves. I met so many caregivers who are ruthless to themselves, never feeling like what they've done is enough. A heavy cloud of failure, self-criticism, dissatisfaction hangs over their heads. I promise you, if you hold yourself to a perfectionist standard, you will, sooner rather than later, be burned to a crisp. Will your loved one do everything as well as you could? Perhaps, but probably not. Will they be as quick as you might be? It's doubtful. But when they take care of themselves, you give them the opportunity to feel better about their lives and more engaged with activities that make life worth living. And, you know, this requires a level of confrontation because, you know, with my wife, and my mother-in-law was living with us too, when she was recovering, I've told the story many times, that the occupational therapist told me to let her do things for herself. Don't always come to her rescue. And so the classic example, she's reaching for a dish or something in the cupboard. And, you know, I say, come on a little more, stand on your toes, you know, and I'll push her a little, you know, and she can reach it. Whereas her mother says, oh, no, dear, let me get that for you. You know, and one will develop independence and the other one will develop an invalid. And so my wife is so independent today. I mean, she's a one-armed wallpaper hanger.
Yeah.
She is a gourmet cook. She cooks every single day, amazing food. She cleans the house. She does the laundry. She puts the dishes in the dishwasher. I mean, she bathes herself. She goes to the bathroom herself. There's nothing that she can't do, maybe 99%. Maybe there's 1% that she needs help.
The fact that she can put her hair in rollers is just amazing. I don't know how.
Well, she was a hairdresser, she decided she was going to do everything that she could do before. She decided, you know, she's just going to reinvent herself, the one-armed, one-leg version of herself. And my gosh, you know, she's like, she makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers.
It's true.
You know, she's the hero. Today, I said on the show, you know, everyone thinks Fred Astaire is a great dancer, and he is. But Ginger Rogers was known to say, well, how about me? I do everything he does, but I do it backwards, and I do it in heels. So it's true. You know, my wife is the hero. And anytime someone, you know, tells me how great I am or how wonderful I am because of what I'm doing, I says, look at, I'm kind of, I have the easy job. It, well, I would probably disagree with myself on some days that it's the easy job, but I don't know who has it worse, the caregiver or the care receiver. I think it's a draw. I think we both have it hard, you know?
I think that, yeah, they're both hard jobs, and we should be kinder to ourselves, not just in terms of saying yes and no, but in terms of not being super critical of ourselves. Ease up on yourself.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
on your
patients. Be nice to yourself.
Be nice to yourself.
If you're not nice to yourself, who's going to be, you know? And then the other thing that I want to talk about is boundaries. You know, Lamont Sanford should have had more boundaries in his life, but he was just a pushover, you know, and he never learned his lesson because that stupid thing worked every single time.
He knew
that he was faking it, but you know, for some reason he says to himself, my God, someday he will be dead. You know, he's like the boy who cried wolf. One day, you know, it's going to be real. And mm-hmm. So that would just, okay. You know, he would feel sorry for him. But, you know, we have to be strong. And we have to be, you know, we just can't let ourselves be motivated by guilt. We need boundaries in our life. So what I put here, boundaries are difficult to set, you know, because they take a level of confrontation. And a lot of caregivers, gosh, they just don't like confrontation. It's just easier to just do it and violate their conscience and just because it's easier. Right? Water flows, mm-hmm. meets its own level, they say.
Level.
So boundaries come easily to certain types of personalities, like me, but are very difficult for others.
Like me.
People pleasers and those who dislike confrontation will struggle to implement boundaries. They would rather be offended than be taken advantage of, than confront, or they would rather be offended and be taken advantage of. And be taken advantage of, then confront their loved one with reasonable rules to ensure the health of the relationship. Isn't that amazing? I am very fortunate to have been blessed with a temperament that makes, I'm speaking to myself here, that makes boundary mm-hmm. setting very easy. I am not afraid of confrontation. In fact, some say I like it too much. So that's something I got to work on. People always know where they stand with me and my boundaries. However, I know others that are not so lucky. They resist confrontation like one would resist a root canal. It would be difficult but not impossible for these people to learn the art of constructive confrontation. Now, there's two words you don't hear next to each other. Constructive confrontation.
Constructive, yeah.
Yeah. And negotiation to implement essential boundaries in their lives for their ultimate survival. You know, read a book on negotiation, by the way, because we're all negotiators, you know. If you have kids, you're a negotiator. If you're a caregiver, you are a negotiator. And you need to, like, negotiate a good deal for yourself. It has to be a win-win. And like Trump would always say, you know, we have dummies in the country. They're always, you know, giving our stuff away in trade deals. And they think we're idiots and this and that. And, you know, part of that is true. My message to you is this. It's your life, too. I encourage you to get over your timidity and become more assertive. Take classes or seminars if needed. Attend a codependent or enablers meeting. Now, that's a good one. You know, the Al-Anon things, enablers.
Coda.
Yeah. Meeting like the ones at Alcoholics Anonymous or recovery groups offer. The benefits will be lifelong. It will really change you. You will learn to change your unhealthy habits and acquire new traits that will benefit all your relationships in life. Healthy emotional and physical boundaries are the basis of healthy relationships. And it's important that the care receiver understands what is allowed in the relationship and what will not be tolerated. This is where it can get very sticky, especially if the relationship is a family member or a loved one. And, you know, it's really the caregiver's fault if they're constantly being offended and their rights are constantly violated because they probably have not shared the boundaries or what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. You know, you got to have that talk and say, okay, here's the ground rules, here's the house rules.
Yeah, but the thing about that is sometimes you're really in the middle of it when you realize, oh God, there should have been ground rules here. I didn't know on this long. I didn't know what it was going to be like. Now that I know, and it's hard to go back.
It's not too late. It's not too late to have that come to Jesus meeting, so to speak, you know.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I was in a relationship where confrontations, we bickered. There used to be a radio show called The Bickersons, and that's what they called me and Steve. We bickered. It was our fighting was our passion.
Really?
of all the lesser passions, we liked fighting best. And it was something that we grew out of when I became the caregiver, and he realized she's right a lot of the time. You know, she's taking really good care of me. You know, he started to appreciate how smart I was and how there for him I was. He started to trust in a different way. Now, he had a lot of reasons not to trust people, but because he had lost his sight in one eye, in an eye operation. So he was very, you know, defensive about a lot of things. So yeah. I had a lot to learn about how to deal with this personality. But on the way to happiness, you know, there was love all along, but we bickered. And doing it creatively, though, is what it's all about, so that you have an outcome that's the one that you want, rather than just stirring the pot constantly.
Was there really a show called The Bickersons?
Yes. Don Amici. Really? And I'm trying to think of who the other. Yes, it was called The Bickersons.
YouTube that. So it's back in the days like Amos and Andy.
It was a radio show. Amos and Andy was actually a television show, too.
Yeah, first radio, though, I guess, right?
Yeah. But the Bickersons so never made it to
was
TV.
It a comedy? It was a comedy, right?
Yeah.
The Bickersons.
Yeah.
I'll check it out.
Yeah. Oh. But we used to make people very uncomfortable. That's because he never knew when to stop, and it took a long time.
So you would just start a big embarrassing fight in front of company or something, huh?
Oh God, there were some terrible fights in the movies when he threw a Coca-Cola on a woman's mink coat on New Year's Eve one year.
God.
I mean, he was a piece of work, but he appreciated me. There was no question about it. You don't put up with that for no reason.
Somehow I can't see the you who you are today putting up with that. You would never put up with that.
No, I wouldn't.
No.
No way.
You've grown. You've changed.
And if I had gotten into a relationship with someone like him who was extremely charming and funny and adorable, all of these things he had going for him, behind the scenes was where it all bubbled and came up. So when people really got to know him, you know, it's like, Adrian, you're too good for him. His mother told me I was too good for him. And she was a Jewish mother.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Well, she changed her mind once I rehabilitated him.
Wow.
Once you start treating people the way they deserve to be treated, you know, with respect, and it starts to change them when all they've been is put down. And that's the way it can be with a lot of caregivers. They've been put down all their lives. Nobody's ever treated them with respect, and they haven't treated themselves with respect, so they have to learn.
That's amazing. Well, listen, let's take another break. We're almost to the hour. So we'll be right back.
You can edit it in.
Welcome back with Abe and Adrian. And we're just having a special show where we're just talking about whatever we want to talk about.
Life,
guilt, boundaries,
I wanted to say on Thursday night, I'm going to be part of a panel at the Village Cinema. There's a movie called Gold Star that is a docudrama written, acted, produced, and directed by this very young woman who was an actress but is now a filmmaker, made with Robert Vaughn as her father, who, when she was born, was 63 years old. So this is a little girl who grew up knowing that when she was 20, he was going to be 83. And she always worried about having an elderly father who would need her in a certain way. And this is about what happened. He has Parkinson's, then he has a stroke on top of the Parkinson's. And I haven't seen the film, but I'm going to be there discussing what it's like to be a caregiver and fielding questions from young caregivers, which is an enormous section of the population, and nobody really thinks about them. Taking care of younger brothers and sisters and their parents or grandparents, nobody gives them any thought, really. So
where is this going to be?
It's a film. This is at the Cinema Village on 12th Street in New York. And then last week I attended a conference, not a conference, an event that was sponsored by ARP and United Healthcare, where what they were doing was looking to brainstorm new ways to think about dementia and dementia care. And there were five tables of six people at every table and one caregiver at every table. And you had, let's say, a designer, a lawyer, a doctor. So you had 20 minutes to come up with all the different things that might be a problem, all the different solutions there might be. And there were these 20-minute segments, and everything was done on sticky pads. And the most creative ideas, it was amazing. It was the name of the company that was hired by ARP and United Healthcare was IDEO, I-D-E-O, and they are a wonderful organization for new kinds of thinking about problems that we face. So it was a great experience. I was very lucky to be invited to that as an expert.
So thank you so much for being on the show again. And how's your therapy going? Are you getting better?
It's not that I'm getting better. I'm having a knee replacement, so I have to get strong before I go in so that my PT afterwards is is on strong legs.
Now, that's an interesting concept. I've never heard anyone get physical therapy before knee surgery. Usually it's afterwards, and usually it's terrible. So maybe this is a good strategy. Yeah.
I mean,
stationary cycle? What kind of things are you doing?
Well, you start every session with a stationary cycle, and then she gives your muscles a little massage. And then you do leg lifts with weights in different positions, and you work with a rubber band around your knees, walking sideways, doing that exercise where you lift your butt up in the air when you're lying down.
Are you in pain when you walk?
Yes.
On both knees?
Just my right knee.
So you're just going to do the right one?
Yes.
Well, good luck with that.
Bad enough. Thank you.
what's the recovery time frame?
Possibly 6 months. 3 months to 6 months. It's a long, it's a year before you're back to better than normal.
Are you gonna get like a powered chair so that you are not totally disabled?
No, they want you walking very quickly. I mean, I will get a walker. I'll have to have a walker. And then I'll have to use a four-prong cane.
And will you have a caregiver watching over you?
I will have a caregiver flown in from California for about 3 weeks. And
anyone you
then,
know? Oh, yes, of course. Probably. Sorry. It's your boyfriend.
And then he'll be coming in every two weeks. But I'll have Corey will be in town, and my housekeeper will be around, and my brother is five blocks away, and I'll be well cared for. But I will be able to write articles on what it's like being the patient being taken care of.
Oh, yes. Good job. Well, thank you again, and we will see you next Wednesday at noon Pacific time.
Oh, yes.
No? Yes.
Yes.
I'm talking to our audience.
I understand.
Hopefully we will see you. So take care and thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.